Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
One board is not, it's too complicated to get into even.
Lawmakers wrap up a series of hearings on public transit funding and whether to combine the CTA, Metra, and PACE.
I never thought I'd say this. She is not as smart as Biden.
Former President Donald Trump visits Chicago. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and more. And movie buffs, mark your calendars as the Chicago International Film Fest prepares to kick off its 60th year. And now to some of today's top stories. Former President Donald Trump talked business with members of the Economic Club of Chicago today. The hour-plus interview with Bloomberg's editor-in-chief, John Micklethwaite, ranged in topics from tariffs to conversations with Russian President Vladimir Putin and immigration. Trump also refused to commit to a peaceful transfer of power should he lose in November's election. He also claimed there was a peaceful transfer of power after the 2020 election, despite the violent attack on the Capitol on January 6th.
What I want to do here is have people feel a dignity, because many times in full bags you get things, and we used to do that, that they don't like. So this way they go around shopping like they're in a Jewel or a Mariano's or Aldi's. They pick out on the shelves things that they like to eat, and there's a dignity about it.
All right, that was not President Trump. That was Father Michael Flager for another story. But meanwhile, demonstrators gathered outside the Fairmont Hotel where the event was to protest what they say are Trump's anti-immigrant, racist, and misogynistic views. Deerfield-based Walgreens says it plans to close about 1,200 locations over the next 3 years. The company says the first 500 will close later this fiscal year. The retail and pharmacy giant suffered a whopping $3 billion quarterly loss and is struggling to turn the business around. No word on where the store closures will take place, but Walgreens says it will prioritize poor-performing stores on company-owned property and those where the leases are expiring. Neighbors who lost access to the St. Sabina food pantry when it closed 2 weeks ago will now be able to shop for food there again.
What we want to do here is have people feel a dignity, because many times in food bags you get things, and we used to do that, that they don't like. So this way they go around shopping like they're in a Jewel or a Mariano's or Aldi's. They pick out on the shelves things that they like to eat, and there's a dignity about it.
Catholic Charities closed the food pantry in the Auburn Gresham neighborhood at the end of September. Father Michael Flager of St. Sabina says he and the church spent the last 2 weeks painting, reorganizing, and partnering with the Greater Chicago Food Depository to reopen the pantry to serve the 800 to 900 people who use it monthly. Neighbors in the north suburbs avoided a catastrophe. See what we did there? Police in Hoffman Estates captured an exotic wild caracal cat this afternoon, saying it was found hiding under a resident's deck and was unharmed. Authorities say the feisty feline had been on the loose for the past few days, and residents were warned to keep their distance if they spotted it. It's unclear where the animal came from. A bill currently pending in the Illinois legislature would make it illegal to keep a caracal as a pet. The cat is now heading to a sanctuary in Wisconsin that specializes in rescuing and caring for abused, abandoned, and exotic injured exotic animals. Glad that one's doing okay. Up next, the latest on efforts to merge the CTA, Metra, and PACE. Nick Blumberg is live from Springfield right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
With Chicago's transit system facing a $730 million budget gap, state lawmakers have been holding a series of hearings on the future of public transportation, how to fund it, and how it should be managed. Earlier today, the Senate's Transportation Committee met for the last of those hearings, for now, and expanded their focus to look at the importance of transit around Illinois. But they still spent plenty of time debating the hot topic in transit land, whether to merge the CTA, Metra, and PACE, as some lawmakers and advocates are proposing. WTTW News reporter Nick Blumberg has been following this issue and joins us live from Springfield. Nick.
Well, Brandis, this idea of a transit merger has been floating around for more than a year. Lawmakers asked the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning to come up with ideas to reform the region's transit system. Ridership is still off of its pre-COVID peak, and federal relief money plugging that gap is only expected to last through the end of the year. Now, one of the ideas that CMAP came up with was to merge the three Chicagoland transit agencies and to funnel in $1.5 billion extra dollars of funding from the state annually. State Senator Ron Villivollum and some of his colleagues have taken up that idea, sponsoring legislation that aligns with CMAP's merger proposal. The refrain you often hear from folks is no funding without reform. Now, Villivollum also chairs the state Transportation Committee, which had six hearings on the topic. The final one was today, though he said this is a weedy and important issue, so it's likely this won't really be the last hearing on the matter. Now, as we've reported, CTA, Metra, PACE, the Regional Transportation Authority, they've all been pushing back against this idea of a merger. So have quite a few suburban lawmakers. They're concerned about losing representation. Right now, many county chairs can appoint one person each to the Metra, PACE, and RTA boards. Under this new merged Metropolitan Mobility Authority, they'd get just one appointment each. Now, the Illinois Municipal League's John Coltis said it's not just about representation, it's also about money.
Legacy financial obligations or debt, including CTA pension liabilities, should not be passed on to other constituent groups. This would result in significant increases in pension costs to the other boards of CTAs combined with them in this fashion. A less drastic approach to governance reform should be considered.
Nick, you mentioned that this hearing took a look at the issue of transit statewide. What did we hear?
That's right. We heard from public transportation leaders around Illinois. Now, to be sure, a lot of these systems are fairly different from those serving the Chicago area. We heard from folks who work mostly in rural communities or primarily with on-demand rides, but they're still facing similar challenges that Chicago area agencies are working to draw back passengers, responding to changing travel patterns or kinds of riders. They're also concerned about getting enough state funding to provide the services that they want to even expand that service. Some of them say they're worried if there's a big restructuring of Chicagoland Transit and a huge influx of cash to the Chicago area, that other parts of the state might lose out.
Our state has a history of providing critical financial support to the public transit statewide. The Illinois Constitution establishes access to public transportation as an essential service in our state. As we've partnered with our communities, we've implemented programs such as free rides for veterans in our community, free rides for K through 12 in our community, all in an effort to reduce the gaps and barriers to opportunities, whether it be employment or education. But that comes with a cost.
Now, the theme of today's hearing was that funding transit is a statewide priority. Lawmakers said they don't want that funding to be a zero-sum game. The General Assembly is expected to take up this issue of Chicagoland transit in its spring session. That will be a huge question of governance as well as funding. We'll talk more about that in just a bit. Brandis.
Nick, thanks. We'll see you soon for Spotlight. And you can read Nick's full story on our website. It is all at WTTW.com/news. Up next, the rest of our Spotlight Politics team joins us on Donald Trump's visit to Chicago and much more. The consent decree that requires Chicago Police Department reforms may expand to include traffic stops. Meanwhile, Springfield held the last of the Senate Transportation Committee hearings, maybe today, to discuss the future of public transit in the city and across the state. And former President Donald Trump was back in Chicago today, which was met with some opposition.
The progressive movement in Chicago does not allow racists to come to our city. Donald Trump is a racist, a misogynist, he's xenophobic, he's anti-black, he's anti-Palestinian, he's absolutely anti-immigrant.
All right. Here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Finicky, Heather Sharon, and Nick Blumberg, still in Springfield, joining us again tonight. Heather, so let's start with some city stuff. Federal Monitor has recommended giving the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability authority over the police department's traffic stop policy. This, of course, follows the fatal shooting of Dexter Reed. Why is this important?
Well, almost immediately after Dexter Reed's death, the monitoring team and the Chicago Police Department agreed to expand the consent decree for the fourth time since 2019 to include traffic stop. That was met with significant opposition, not just from progressive older people, but also the ACLU, who said that the consent decree wasn't the right way to ban pretextual stops. They want Chicago police officers to be banned from making the kind of stop that they say led to Dexter Reed's death. Now, what the monitors have done in their most recent report is basically try to split the baby. They say the consent decree should expand to include traffic stops, but the new community commission should have some authority over that policy. How exactly that will all work out is very much up in the air, but it is the first indication that the monitors see the CCPSA as having a formal role in the consent decree.
So, Nick, we just talked about this. You clued us in earlier on the Senate Transportation Committee hearings. What is next for this debate?
Well, in addition to these public hearings, there's also a working group that's, having more private meetings that's made up or led by members of the Illinois House. So the idea there is that there's both a public process where, you know, folks can come and talk about this in an open hearing. And then there's also quieter closed door meetings. We heard from Illinois House Speaker Chris Welch that he expects this issue to come up in the spring session in 2025, but it's not likely to be resolved until the end of the spring session, even if it is, you know, more modest reforms, say a more empowered RTA, which is one of the ideas that's been floated as well. There are just so many questions, so many stakeholders. And of course, there's the question of where do we get all the extra money, whether it's just to plug the gap, you know, with the immediate fiscal cliff, or if it is this extra $1.5 billion each year.
Perennial question. Amanda, let's turn to schools, because I think we've all got a little bit of whiplash after last week's back and forth over Chicago public schools. What is the likelihood that the state will intervene?
Yeah, fair enough. And that whiplash isn't going to end. Nope. By the way, keep watching WTTW in Chicago tonight for more on that, including Friday. But state intervention, I think it really depends on what direction the Johnson administration and the new school board takes in terms of what the state is going to do. Right now, it's just this lingering, hey, everybody, it's out there. I think that you have legislators who have talked about that, say that they're calling for a state response in response to their own constituents who are really frustrated and scared about what they perceive to be as chaos and questions over their children's education and their children's very future. So a lot of this will depend on, is a, you know, high interest loan taken out, and is that something that is perceived to be helpful to education, or is that something that is going to be seen as bankrupting CPS? So legislators will very much take their cues from the future here. But Brandis, I want to say that, I mean, this notion isn't completely unprecedented. It was hugely pushed back on when Governor Bruce Rauner raised the notion of a state takeover of CPS just because it was CPS. But you have certainly had, in fact, there's state law that dictates when there is going to be state intervention with the district.
It's not the first time CPS has had a budget hole or struggled
filling it. Chicago, East St. Louis have had financial oversight from the state before. This isn't what the state is looking at.
So, Heather, CPS CEO Pedro Martinez and school board members are invited to tomorrow's City Council Education Committee. What can we expect?
Well, we can expect CEO Pedro Martinez to show up because he had already agreed to speak to the Budget Committee, and it seems like a bunch of council chairs got together and said, hey, let's do this all at the same time, save everybody another trip to City Hall. I personally appreciate that. But it's not clear whether any school board members are going going to show up. We talked about this after the city council meeting last night. Mayor Brandi Johnson has been very clear that they are invited to attend but are under no obligation to do so. The real question I think that Pedro Martinez is going to face is about what the city should do to help CPS sort of fill that $300 million hole. And I will be very interested to hear from older people like Bill Conway and Brendan Riley about whether they're willing to sort of pony up some of their precious TIF dollars, of course earmarked for projects that they are very much in favor of in their downtown wards, to help fill that hole, because they are very opposed to that high interest loan. The thing about budgets, Brandon, is that it's a zero-sum game. You can only spend $1 in one place, and I think that is the fundamental truth that both the city and the school district have to come to grips with.
Okay, so real quick, let's talk about former President Donald Trump. He's back in town speaking at the Economic Club of Chicago. His running mate, J.D. Vance, was in the suburbs yesterday for a fundraising event. Heather, why are they here?
Money, I think, is the simple reason. We know that Vice President Kamala Harris has a pretty significant financial advantage over the Republican ticket. They are still raising money. It's easier to do that in states like Illinois, where you can sort of go in and get out. But, you know, I think that also we saw the president, or the former president, I should say, talk to sort of the business community and sort of make his pitch for sort of tariffs. I don't really know how well received that was. I've seen differing reports from inside that room, but it's clear that he is pitching himself on an economic basis, while we see the vice president doing a little bit more sort of cultural reach out. She's on the radio this afternoon with Charlemagne, and, you know, of course, we heard her on Call Her Daddy last week.
Of course,
and
we did.
The president, by the way, Brandis, did talk about, by the way, money. He said, hey, you're a rich audience here, Chicago business community.
Yes.
He was pretty happy about that.
There were times there it sounded like a friendly crowd with some applause for sure. And some cheering for him. That is Spotlight for the night. Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharon, Nick Blumberg in Springfield Forest. Thanks, gang. And be sure to check out our WTTW News Voter Guide. It is a one-stop shop for everything you need to know before voting. You'll find candidate profiles and questionnaires, as well as key dates to know and whether you're registered to vote, because that feels like it's important. That is all at WTTW.com/voter guide. Up next, what to expect at this year's Chicago Film Festival. Stay with us. It's lights, camera, action for North America's longest-running competitive film festival this week. The Chicago International Film Festival kicks off October 16th and will commemorate its 60th anniversary. At the time of its founding, its director couldn't have imagined what it would become. And joining us now are Michael Kutza, the founder of the Chicago International Film Festival, and Mimi Plauchet, the festival's artistic director. Welcome. Thanks to you both for joining
Thank
us.
You. Thank you.
Michael Kutza, let's start with you first. Let's go back to 1964. You were in your 20s. Why did you want to start a film festival? Why Chicago?
Not just start a film festival. I wanted to change Chicago. So I was a filmmaker and a graphic designer, as you can see.
A little bit.
Yeah. And making short films and entering them in film festivals. So I sort of saw in Poland and France and Ireland. And I sort of just see what we're missing in this town. And that's how it all began. Got a group of people right after college and said, let's do an international film festival. Let's do something big. Because we had no places to see film in Chicago, really, in those days. And that's how it came about. And I was lucky enough to have a mentor named Colleen Moore, the silent film star. And she taught me the ropes, really, because I was just a kid. I still am just a kid.
And you're still just a kid, yes. A kid who knows a lot more now.
A thing or two.
So the festival features your first, maybe second time directors.
That was the idea.
Yes. And obviously, it's been 60 years, so you've expanded. But first, second time directors as the opening film each year. Mimi.
And that's just so perfect what Mimi's doing.
Right. So yeah. This year, there's a film that is called The Piano Lesson, yes. Directed by Malcolm Washington. Why this one?
I mean, I think going back to the original kind of Michael's idea about what the festival is about, this idea of discovery and providing a platform for emerging directors was really important. And when, first of all, when we saw the film, we fell in love with it. And then it felt like it was really the bonus that it was a first-time director whose work we really wanted to showcase and introduce to Chicago and to the world.
And to be clear, Malcolm Washington, brother of John David Washington,
yes.
Who is starring in the film,
yes.
Sons of... Denzel Washington. Denzel
Washington. Talent runs in the family.
It does, it does. Michael, you've mentioned before that the idea was very new at the time. Why was it important for you to create something new? Why was nobody else doing this?
Well, consider that this festival is before Sundance and Toronto and Telluride and Tribeca and all and Montreal. It was unheard of. And I'm a Chicagoan. I'm from Austin, West Side. And I wanted to, as I said earlier, I want to change the city, change the whole scope of things, to see what you're missing. You're missing the world, and we've brought the world here. We still do.
What went into planning the festival? What goes into planning it each year?
Well, each year.
I'm sure it's gotten easier over the years.
Well, the first year, of course. First year, nobody came. They weren't ready to see foreign film, really. So the only way I could get Chicago people interested in these international films was to spice it up with movie stars. So it was very star-studded in its early years, and then that caught on. And the temptation was see Bette Davis or see Joan Crawford or see someone or a famous director. Maybe you'll stay for a Hungarian film. Maybe you'll stay for something Italian. It's tough. Chicagoans are tough. But then it caught on.
Yeah, right. And I mean, I would say there's still kind of that kind of magical combination of bringing some of the stars and the celebrated directors to the festival, to Chicago, but then also that allows us to shine a spotlight on this amazing cinema from around the world. And like Michael said, it's caught on, and we have a really loyal, curious audience who continues to show up year after year. And one thing that's particularly exciting is our audience is getting younger and younger, and we love that the younger generation has become very interested and excited about international and independent film at the festival.
And I was going to ask, though, since it's been 60 years, how is the festival marking its 60th anniversary this year?
Yeah, it's a combination of a bit of looking backwards with some retrospective screenings and celebrating filmmakers whose work we've shown in the festival in the past, and also some partnership with some countries who we have a really long relationship with. So like in the 70s, Michael was the first in the U.S. to showcase a lot of the German New Wave directors. So we have a nice partnership with German cinema this year to showcase the new talent that's emerging out of Germany, but also really looking forward about like what's next for cinema, and that's still that commitment to first and second time directors.
And you know what's important is audiences have to see these things. It's a niche. It's a niche audience that you're not going to get on Netflix or HBO or anything. What she has at the festival, this is my granddaughter, by the way. I was called the father of the film festival the other day. And I thought, okay.
Sounds like it.
Thank you. We've only worked together, 12 or 13 years? Yeah. Gosh. You're not going to see these films anywhere else, basically. And you've got to go. I'm going to see 25 of them myself.
Well, and how has the film festival industry, or how have festivals altogether influenced the film industry, and streaming in particular?
Well, you can answer that better than me.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, again, festivals create this excitement around or buzz around a film. I think also just this sense of film feeling, or a film festival feeling like you're attending an event. And so with that buzz or creating that platform for films to be launched out into the world, so some of them will already have distribution, but then there's a lot of films that because of playing in festivals, they get noticed by distributors, by audiences, you know, even by the streamers, and they start paying attention to them.
You know what's wonderful about the whole situation is a young filmmaker may show the student film of Oliver Stone. No one heard of Oliver Stone, or the first film of Bill Friedkin. And then Oliver would come back with a feature, or Bill, or whatever, et cetera. And Scorsese, as you know, we were together at an event. Scorsese said, Chicago, a deep heart, Chicago is important to me. My career started here because of the film festival. And he still says that, which is sort of cool.
Yeah, and this year we're closing with Robert Zemeckis' here, native Chicagoan, but also showed his short film in the early 70s.
Bob Zemeckis.
Michael, why do you think this festival has lasted as long as it has?
Well, because of me, of course.
because of the engine. Which
yeah,
would be you.
And I think teaching each generation to make it feel as if it's important to you, right?
Yeah.
And 300 volunteers and the excitement. Why has it lasted so long? Because you can't get this anywhere else. And I think I've trained, I like to think I'm a great mentor to so many people that have gone on. In fact, I was thinking, was it an intern, was Mark Evans, who became a programmer. And when he left Chicago, and he ended up becoming the head of production for Paramount Pictures.
So obviously it's a place for the directors to start, but also the folks who helped to organize
our
the film festival
who can go on to do some great things.
Yeah. We're going to have to leave it there because we want folks to go to the film festival. They can't hear about all of it here. So our thanks to Michael Kutza and Mimi Plauché for joining us. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And the Chicago International Film Fest kicks off tomorrow and runs through the 27th. There's more information on our website. We're back to wrap things up right after this. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. The new president of Northeastern Illinois University joins us amid turbulent times on college campuses across the country. And public schools CEO Pedro Martinez and school board members are set to attend a city council committee meeting. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm committed to giving back to the community through law and philanthropy.